in one of the big crates of yearly Christmas decorations that comes out at my family's house, there's a set of Christmas linens. We have like Christmas dish towels and stuff like this. I don't know why we have all this stuff. But one of the things in there, and it goes back a long way because I remember it at least 25 years back, my mother, someone gave her at some point an Epiphany apron. And the apron says, three wise women would have asked directions, showed up on time, helped deliver the child, baked a casserole, and brought practical gifts. I think it's helpful to be reminded just how weird, just how out of our normal set of expectations this gospel we hear today is. Magi following a star, an astrological symbol. We don't do that today, and certainly the Jews of Jesus' time didn't do it either. They come looking for a newborn king, a destined child. We don't really believe in that either. We don't look for people to be destined at their birth. They come with weird and symbolic and sort of gifts that require decoding that certainly don't seem practical. But the primary thing they come to do, this is repeated three times in today's gospel, is they come to do him homage. The word in Greek is proskinesis. And it means a kissing towards, that's the etymology. But really where it comes from is it's a practice of the eastern courts in Persia, and these are magi from the east, a practice of a way of showing respect, showing submission to a social better. So it could be as simple as a bow of the head or a kiss on the cheek, but as the gap in social status increased, so too did the elaborateness of the prostration, until finally you end up with people kneeling down, touching their foreheads to the floor, and sometimes even prostrating full out, stretched out, bowed before someone else on the floor. It's a posture of vulnerability and of submission and indeed of worship. And we don't do much bowing nowadays either. We bow, perhaps, when we're in some cultural context where that seems to be the thing that's done, but it's not our own context. Or we bow sometimes liturgically at church, or we bow during the sign of peace if we've got a cold that we don't want to pass on. But we don't do a lot of bowing as 21st century Americans. You meet your boss, handshake. You meet your boss's boss, handshake. You meet the President of the United States, handshake. In fact, with some reliability, one of the routine outrage factories is occasionally when a president goes and visits a country in Asia where the cultural norm is bowing and bows, somebody gets all fed up about this, and Americans don't bow! Because the symbol, and really what's going on in that prostration that was the custom in the Persian courts, is you're saying, I'm at your power. You know, apparently, the open hand of greeting or the handshake is a way of saying, as an equal, I present no threat. Look, I'm holding no weapon. But prostration, stretching out on the floor, is a way of saying, you have all the power here. And we don't do that. That is not a usual posture for us. In fact, we're likely to assume, if someone demands some kind of show of submission, that it's actually some kind of pathology on that person's part. Are you so lacking in self-confidence that you need someone else to make you feel big? And sometimes I think we can bring that attitude to religious worship as well. Why does God need us to show him that he's God? Surely he knows already. Why does God need us to stand and sit and kneel in a particular pattern according to a ritual to confirm that he is in fact the one who created the universe? God's still God regardless. And so this act of worship, this act of homage, which the Magi come to pay to the newborn Jesus, seems, from our perspective, often pointless. Or at best, it might carry symbolic weight, but nothing more than that. Once we know what it means, once we know what the symbol is supposed to convey to us, here is the Messiah, here is the Savior, not just for the Jews, but the Gentiles, and here are the meanings of the gifts, gold for kingship and frankincense for divinity and myrrh for future suffering. Once we know that, sort of, well, now it's all over. We've got the meat out of the story and there's nothing left in it. I'd like to suggest for today that we spend a little bit of time taking seriously the fact that the Magi come to do him homage. The fact that the Magi come to prostrate themselves before the newborn child. And think about what the act of worship meant for them and what it still means for us today. There are two things, I think, that act of worship, that act of submission and vulnerability, helps us to accomplish. The first is acknowledging that we stand in the presence of something greater than ourselves. This is, I think, similar, very similar, to the experience we might have when we go and stand on the shore and look out at the ocean. Or when we look out at a mountain landscape or over a canyon or something like that. And experience the sublime in nature. Something bigger than us. Something greater than us. Something longer lasting and more eternal than us. And in its presence, we become quiet. We become reflective. We know where we stand. The other thing I think worship helps us do, this act of homage, is it's a way of claiming our own identity. Not so much by telling the one we worship who he is, because God, of course, doesn't need that. But rather by reminding us who we are, by reminding us how we stand in relation to God, dependent upon him, in need of his grace poured out so abundantly. So our act of vulnerability there is really just saying exactly what we know to be true. I need you, God. And I can't accomplish it on my own. It's an act of identity in the best sense. Viewed from that perspective, I think we can see more clearly how this radical act of worship that the Magi undertake really turns over the categories. Because they came from the courts of the East to a nowhere backwater town in occupied territory under submission itself to Rome. And they visited its vassal king, and they did not do him homage. And they went to an even smaller backwater town, and they found a baby, and not an impressive baby, not one who came with his own royal court assembled around him ready to go. They found a child and his mother, and they knelt down and did him homage. They prostrated themselves, made themselves submissive and vulnerable before a child lying in a manger. That act of worship turns the world upside down. And it's an act of worship that I expect many of us have repeated as well. Because I think it can't be otherwise, in fact, that not only were they showing that this child was the King of the Jews, that this child was something special, I suspect they were also, in the act of kneeling down, able to peer over the edge of the manger and look into Jesus' face. The way we might when we meet a new baby, even cradled on his mother's breast, and lean over and lean down and get close to see those infant eyes for the first time. That also is an act of worship. And what the Magi do in today's gospel helps unite them. It helps reveal to us that the worship to which we're called, the worship that we enter into every time we come into this church and this community and join together at the Eucharist, is not just about us becoming vulnerable in the face of God, but also about God who's become vulnerable for our sake and in our form. The only reason the Magi can kneel down, can prostrate themselves, can pay homage to this otherwise undistinguished baby in an otherwise undistinguished town is because God has first knelt down, in a sense, to earth, because eternity has entered time, because the uncreated light has become visible in human flesh. So the challenge for us is how to make our act of worship, wherever it happens, however often it happens, our kneeling down, our recognizing the one who is larger than us, how to make that also an act of humanity. How to make that also the act that recognizes in the face of the child infinite love come to birth. The challenge for us is both to make the worship we enter into here in this building an expression of that reality, but also when we are sent out, fed by the Eucharist, to recognize that every human face becomes likewise an opportunity for worship. I know it's not necessarily comfortable or common for us to bow down, for us to prostrate. It's not something we do anymore. But let me recommend trying it. Maybe not physically. I'm not saying go out to, 36th Street and stretch yourself out full length on the pavement. If it helps, maybe. But when you see a human face, when you see someone in need of love, that is an act of worship. And the worship we engage in here every week is meant to prepare us for it, to strengthen us for it, and finally to help us celebrate it when it happens out in the world as well. That we bring those things full circle, and that we, like the Magi, come before Him to recognize our Savior and do Him homage.